Author of the Week on Literary Lusts, brought to you by Radio Gorgeous.
Welcome, Kate Moss.
Thank you.
We're here on publication day of The Taxidermist's Daughter, your latest novel.
Yeah.
Which I love because I'm a big fan of taxidermy anyway.
Oh, are you? Fantastic.
Yes. Polly Morgan. And,
some
of her work.
It's so hip now. That all of the taxidermy that used to be to do with museums and crafts, and people always imagined very elderly men with cobwebs off their tweed jackets and their eyebrows. And of course, now it's just come out of the art schools, and there's so many incredible artists working in that field. Mm-hmm. Amazing, amazing.
Yes. Tell us the story in brief, the taxidermist's
with
daughter.
No spoiler.
No spoiler.
Yeah, okay. So The Taxidermist's Daughter is a revenge thriller, really. It's set in Sussex in the south of England in 1912, which until 2012 was the wettest summer ever on record. And it's the story of Connie, whose father is, you'll not be surprised to know, a taxidermist. She of the title. And they live in a small village, Fishbourne, and something has happened 10 years ago in the past. She can't remember what it is, but it has ruined her father. He's turned to the bottle and he's a haunted and hunted man. And she therefore does his work, the taxidermy, in secret, because women in 1912 weren't allowed to be taxidermists. And they live in an isolated house on the corner of the marshes. And in that house are the remains of his once famous museum of bird taxidermy. But all of the exhibits are in glass bell jars and display cases and are dusty and unloved. And people start to die in the village. And I suppose what I wanted to do was firstly write a real page-turning thriller with a woman at the heart of it. One of my, sort of, I suppose, my classic, strong, independent, quite isolated, bright women frustrated by the restrictions on her. But also in a revenge thriller, I suppose I was saying, if there is no redress for women under the law, what do you do? And if you do take revenge, how much is too much? And so I wanted to play with those ideas. So there's a lot of questions in there, but in the end, it's a whodunit and a why done it.
Radio Gorgeous, the sexist station where you'll only hear the female voice.
But it also, one to imagine that 5 years hence there would be World War I.
Yeah.
And that's sort of, for me, it doesn't feature in the novel, but to think about women's roles then and how they were to change so dramatically just after that.
You are so right. The timing is absolutely critical to the story. So it's set in 1912. And when I was bumbling around in the archives of the West Sussex Record Office, and a big shout out to them, they were all so helpful to me. It was so interesting to note that on the pages of the national, the local newspaper that came out every Wednesday, the Chichester Observer, it now comes out every Thursday. interestingly, there's been slippage in these 100 years. Nobody knew. Nobody knew the war was coming at all. Of course, politicians in their ivory towers, maybe, you know, there were rumbles. But it was completely still the world of the previous century. And so for me, when you write a gothic thriller, gothic fiction has really particular characteristics. And they, I suppose I kind of think of it as being the fiction of being caught between a rock and a hard place. So it always has extreme weather. And the idea that weather is not our friend, the weather will get us in the end. So storms and ice flows and floods and fires. And on the other hand, it has a really quite violent narrative. Somebody who is out of control in some way or another. There's always violent death. There's always jeopardy. There's always intimidation. There's always sort of a momentum towards some horrifying, you know,
madness.
Revelation, madness.
Fear and madness.
Fear and madness. And this is all bubbling beneath the surface. But when the novel finishes, I like old-fashioned novels. I'm a storyteller, so I like beginnings, middles, and ends. I like there to be resolution at the end of a novel as a reader and as a writer. But when I finished it and I was writing it, I very strongly wanted to say the village has survived this awful story. There has been a resolution. It looks like things will be all right. And we finish in the graveyard where we started. But every reader knows that that shadow of blood is far from over, that what they have seen is nothing to what they will see in a couple of years' time. And I didn't want to write about the First World War because I think many people have done it brilliantly, and there's, you know, I didn't have something new to say about that. But looking at the years just before, as I have looked in the years just after in The Winter Ghosts, the consequences of it, you know, that's my bigger theme, I suppose, war and the consequences of war. So I'm really delighted that you picked that up because it was exactly that reason, that worse is to come.
Yes, and they almost seem trapped in a bell jar themselves.
Exactly,
you know,
exactly.
Under glass.
Yeah. And we know, we want to go, guys, oh God, you know, want to put our hope, the reader wants to put their arms around those characters at the end because we know.
Follow us on Twitter, radio_gorgeous. Lots of love, darlings. Mwah.
But there are also very, very current themes in The Taxidermist's Daughter. There's one I don't want to give away, but another one, recovered memories, which is, you know, with sexual abuse and things like that is a very, you know, present issue. But there's, like many of your novels, but I'd never heard of this term, but time slip.
Yes.
Okay, so this is only going back 10 years, but it goes back in history and in time. And again, more themes that are familiar in your writing as well, of, you know, hauntings, ghosts, the past coming back. Is that a theme for you personally? Do you feel tied to the past? I mean, I think it's a very English thing, folk traditions that comes in.
I tell you what I think. For me, all stories come out of place. That's where it starts for me. The idea that a particular story could only be told, The Taxidermist's Daughter can only be told set on the Fishbourne Marshes. It's not a story that exists separate from the land, because we all come out of the land and we're products of the environment in which we grow up. And I am a country girl, not a city slicker. And I feel enormous sense of peace when I'm walking on the marshes in Fishbourne, in the Sussex Downs, in the woods of the Languedoc, the Garrigues, and the Pyrenees. And what I feel there is not that there are ghosts everywhere, quite. But what I do feel is that we are such insignificant creatures passing through. We are butterflies. And I love the idea that when I'm walking along a path, that if I could turn around just a tiny bit quicker than it's capable of any human being to do, I kind of would see all those echoes of the past on the path behind me. And I find that really comforting, the idea that we are all part of a shared human story and that there will be people walking those paths long after I'm dead and gone and in the ground. And I'm walking the same paths as women and men who did so hundreds of years before. So for me, it's that, really. It's that I feel part of something that is not simply the here and now. And of course, you look at the hills, look at the Fishbourne Marshes, walking on the Fishbourne Marshes today, when I was writing the novel, remembering my childhood there with my parents and sisters on those same paths, and then imagining Connie and her father and the other characters living in houses, imagined houses, dotted around the estuary. And then you look to the east and you see the spire of Chichester Cathedral. And that's been there for, you know, 1,000 years. And you look to the downs, to the north, and those are Iron Age barrows. And those woods, we lost many of our trees in the great storm of 1987 in Sussex, but the trees that are there in Kingly Vale, it's the oldest yew forest in Europe. And the main trees at the heart of Kingly Vale are said to have sprung up, these yew trees that are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years old, on the ground where the Saxon defenders of Sussex died protecting their land. And the yews are supposed to have come up from there. So this is a long answer, but to say that for me, that's what links all of my books. They're all about love letter to the land, I suppose. Mm-hmm.
And all of your characters have been seen out of the corner of your eye.
That's right.
My weekday fix? Darling, it has to be Radio Gorgeous.
What also strikes me, that what you said earlier about war, that's the dark side of being of this land and these people and these histories. The dark side is is the war that comes out of that history as well.
Yes, that's absolutely right. But also, The Taxidermist's Daughter, which is a novel that I loved writing. It was like, it's the fastest I've ever written, and it felt like drawing a deep breath and just plunging into a swimming pool, swimming all the way underwater till I hit the far end, you know. And I just had so much joy of writing on it, because it is a thriller, not historical writing. So although I did some research, it's not linked to the real past. I didn't have that restriction on me. So the thing about The Taxidermist's Daughter, in common with the second of my Languedoc trilogy, Sepulchre, is that they are more domestic. So in my other big novels, Labyrinth and Citadel, the war is war. It is the crusade against the Cathars in the 13th century, which was a genocide and, you know, changed the face of Europe and was, you know, the first Christian-on-Christian battle in quite that sort of way in Europe. And Citadel, of course, is Second World War. It's resistance of the resistance against the Wehrmacht and the Nazis and the SS. Taxidermist's Daughter plays on the fact that we know to be true that the most dangerous thing for many women is what happens behind the closed doors. So there is an element of the hidden violence that happens even in a sleepy, pretty, gorgeous village in Sussex. And it sounds like a ludicrous thing to have written such a dark story set in a place that I love so much. But the truth is, the stories come up, the characters come up and tap you on the shoulder. You know, I'm not someone who writes love stories. There's brilliant love stories written by writers much more skilled than me. I'm interested in writing about everything else in a woman's life, not that moment of finding the right person. And so that's it, really, that this is it's not a book about domestic violence at all. It's a thriller. But it is that idea that when the door is shut, that's when the danger might begin. And that's at the heart of all Gothic fiction.
Thank you, Kate. Coming up in part two, Kate Moss talks to us about the short story she was commissioned to write to commemorate Agatha Christie's 125th birthday.
This has been a Radio Gorgeous production for RadioGorgeous.com. Get in contact with us, contact us on info@RadioGorgeous.com, and to sign up for our shows to come once a week into your inbox. Who can think of anything better, darling?
This has been a Radio Gorgeous production, produced and presented by Donna Freed, edited by Bree Forer.